Hey everyone, it is Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And you're listening to The Wheat and the Chaff. And we have a great show for you today.
Yes,
yeah, I mean, there's so much that's happened. There's so much that is happening. We're going to cover Twitter because that's one of our joys. And we're going to cover current events because that's another one of our joys. And we'll find some fun in there. I'm going to start with last night. If you are not aware, last night was the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, and it was everything we could have hoped for and more from a reality show star and a former vice president.
I saw somebody tweeted this, and it was really funny. I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but I'll get the gist of it. He said the debate was like Facebook becoming incarnate on my screen.
Yes, yes. I think someone else had mentioned they're like basically at this point Donald Trump is just live reading his Twitter feed during the debate. Like it was just simply so. I'll give you some context since you didn't catch the debate. Ryan was playing a ball game. He had important things to do. Like
it was a championship game.
We understand. We understand. And trust me, there's more debates to come.
Yes,
but it was an hour and a half of some of the most painful television I've watched in a really long time. Like, I got to the point last night where just the sound of the two voices talking over each other consistently and continually in this kind of like pseudo-scream way, like it just started hurting my ears. And so the last night, you know, you go in thinking it's going to be a debate. You know Trump's going to kind of speak the way Trump speaks. You know Biden's kind of going to be Biden, right? So you knew it was like, all right, honestly, I thought it's not going to be the most engaging debate I've ever seen. Trump's going to sit there and kind of rattle off in his way he does, and Biden will
struggle to put words together.
Yeah, right? Like, it's an interesting thing. Neither gentleman is...
Wait, are we going to call him gentleman?
Neither guy is overly eloquent. Right? Like, whether you liked him or didn't like him, one thing you could say about Barack Obama was the man is an incredible public speaker.
Yeah, he is.
Right? And so, you know, you knew that this was not going to be Obama level of a debate. However, I was not expecting the fact that as soon as the first person started talking, like, they didn't get five or six words in, and the other guy starts cutting in.
Yeah.
And it just went that way all night. And it got to the point where it just sounded like one of those songs where you start a line and like five or six words in, the next person starts the same line, but then it's five or six words.
Like the Pitch Perfect song battle.
Yeah, it's just like, but in that case, that's carefully orchestrated and choreographed to actually
match
up.
And it sounds good. It's like music to your ears.
This is just as if someone started a line of a song, but then like six words in, someone else started a completely different song, and then someone else started another song. And so by the time you're a couple sentences in, there's just simply nothing intelligible.
It's like when my oldest Cademan was younger, and I had to tell him, like, you have to stick with a song and play it the whole way through, because he would sit there on his iPod just switch in the middle of the song to another one. And it's like, you have to stick with the entire song, because that's really annoying to listen to, like, jumping from one song to another, to another, to another.
This was like that times 100, because most of the time they didn't finish a sentence. Like, we got to the point where all, you know, for us, my family was watching, and all four of us are like sitting there yelling at the TV, for goodness sake, just one of you finish a sentence. And part of it had to do with the fact that they would start a thought, and then someone, you know, the other candidate would jump in on them, and then they would get derailed. So you ended up with like the first 30 minutes of it was painful, confusing. I really couldn't tell you what was said. You know, I felt personally that at least in the beginning, Biden at least held his composure better. Because Trump was just very, very, very rude in just continually talking over him, throwing stuff at him, undermining anything he said. But at that point, like, after a while, you could see it finally rattled Joe, and it finally, you know, kind of got underneath his skin. And at one point, the most memorable moment of the first 30 minutes was Joe Biden turning to Donald Trump and just yelling into the microphone, "Would you please just shut up?" One of these men will be our president in just a month or so.
It's like the movie Grumpy Old Men.
That's what I'm saying. It's like Walter Matthau and John what's his name? Jack Lemmon.
Yes, Jack Lemmon. Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Yep. Get together and just go at it.
Yeah.
You know, again, about like something completely random. It was memorable in its awfulness.
So one interesting thing, so I didn't watch the debate. I just kind of followed it on the dumpster fire of Twitter. And just read people's comments and this and that. And, basically the gist of people's comments were, do we have to vote for either one of these people? One of my friends said, neither one of these guys deserve our vote. I'm like, that's very true.
There is Joe Jorgensen is always ready for you to be the write-in candidate. Oh, and Kanye. I believe Kanye is willing to step back up again.
I'm thinking more of a more stellar candidate that really stands out from the rest. His name is Zach Morris. So I'm going to go with him. That's my writing.
I will say this. I am actually very interested. I believe next Wednesday. What day is it? Today's Wednesday, right?
Yes.
I think it's next Tuesday or next Wednesday evening. I can't remember which one. But the vice president and, you know, the candidate vice president will debate, which I'm assuming will be a much more civil.
I think that's going to be a little bit more civilized.
Yeah, a little more civil.
Because they're both seem to be pretty, you know, fairly civilized people.
You know, the part that surprised me the most, and I don't know if it's just simply because maybe I forgot, like, I probably just forgot, or maybe I just misremember, but I kept waiting for a commercial break, right, in this debate. I kept thinking, like, okay, at any moment they're going to take a break for a commercial, we will all be able to take a collective deep breath and let our ears get a moment of peace from this just verbal assault that has happened to them, and it never came. And I felt like in my mind it was kind of like the commercial break will happen, the chief of staff for the president and, you know, the candidate, you know, the chief of staff for the candidate, you know, for Biden, they'll both run out, look at these guys and be like, you have got to stop.
Yeah,
you know, talk some sense in, and then like they'll run off the stage and the live camera will come back up, and it just never happened. Yeah. And It just devolved into a shouting match of each guy claiming just stuff against the other guy. There was name calling. It was the most unpresidential I've seen in any debate that I've ever seen.
You know what we should go back to? We should go back to whoever, you know, you got the whoever runs for president, whoever finishes second is the vice president. Rather than the president get to choose,
right.
So then, how entertaining would that be?
We'll go do some Jefferson, Jefferson doctrine there.
However entertaining would that have been for the last 4 years, where Trump was the president and Hillary was the vice president?
Oh,
that would have been glorious. Now it'd be like either Biden wins or Trump wins. The other was the vice president.
It would be like a new Agatha Christie novel, Murder in the White House.
Probably would.
And so, unfortunately, you'd basically it would start off with, you know, the butler comes in and they're both dead.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out who in the White House, which staff member decided to just wipe everyone out.
Or did they just kill each other?
That's right. Like that's
did they do an old-fashioned duel?
On the case.
Did they do an old-fashioned duel and one of them turned before the 10 paces?
Dueling is underrated. Let's be
yes.
Frank.
So when I was on Twitter last night, I saw this. I actually didn't see the tweet. Somebody like screenshot the tweet and posted it. But there was a tweet that says, you know, can somebody just turn Trump's mic off?
Yes.
And what was interesting about that is not the tweet, because you're like, yeah, well, yeah, we wish that.
I think all of America was begging that someone would turn off Trump's
mic. We've been wishing that somebody would have taken Trump's Twitter access away for the last 4 years. But it was from Hillsong United on their Twitter feed. It's like, oh, whoops! And then, so to this morning, because I saw this, I didn't see it last night, actually. I think I saw it this morning. And then I saw Hillsong's response and said this was an accident. One of our staff people thought they were on their own personal Twitter and didn't realize they were on our Hillsong Twitter, and they apologized. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I'd apologize for that. I'd be like, yeah. They should have just... Because here's the thing. Here's what kind of bothers me sometimes with, today's society, and sometimes in church and this kind of relates to something else I was going to bring up. You know, the church, we want to apologize for these things, but I'm like, nah, just leave it. Just speak it like it is. Yeah, somebody should turn his mic off. And then I saw this So I read this article yesterday where somebody is like exposing some like behind the scenes talk of Trump criticizing evangelicals.
Ooh.
And saying
it won't matter.
Yeah.
It won't matter.
He says that, you know, they come in, he meets with them, they lay hands on him, pray for him, and then some, like a former staff person or former aide has said, you know, as soon as they leave, he's like, can you believe they believe that? You know, you know, just criticizing him, throwing him under the bus.
It won't matter. Paula White has too much invested in being the glorious spiritual leader for...
And Robert Jeffress' whole face is brown at this point.
You know, I mean, it's just... That collection of people, I feel, is just simply way too caught up in their own kingdom building.
It's not the kingdom of God building.
They're as far removed from anything evangelical, but it doesn't surprise me, right? Because, I mean, in that sense, they are frauds. That's what you would do that, right? It's like if you have someone who comes in and says, oh, we're going to put the evangelical, you know, hootie-dootie on you, but they don't believe it themselves. Like, that's the part, right? Like, part of me goes, like, it doesn't surprise me if Donald Trump goes, can you get that guy? How does that, you know, person believe all this nonsense? Because you know that they do themselves. The one that I find interesting is, you know, you think of like, was it Copeland who blew the COVID away in the spring, you know?
With all his droplets.
I need to check in on Copeland. I haven't checked in on Copeland. But
I think his Holy Spirit droplets were stronger.
That's the kind of stuff where you sit there and go like, you know, they do it because it's theater. It panders to an audience that buys into that level of theater. It's the same reason people watch wrestling.
Yeah, and my problem with it is that there's not enough Christians that, you know, on the other side are calling them out for it. Like you know, Robert Jeffress is with the SBC. Why isn't the SBC going to him and, you know, it doesn't have to be public, but it can go to him and say, if you don't stop and repent of this nationalism that you're following, we're completely disassociating with you.
For the same reason that Liberty didn't hold Falwell
exactly.
accountable.
Like, you know what I mean? Hold these people
accountable.
You're going
to sit there and try to tell me that no one on Liberty's staff, that no one in Liberty's board of directors, no one in their
board all
advisor,
knew what he was doing.
That they knew that, even if they didn't know the exact specifics, that they didn't know something was out of whack. You're going to sit there and try to tell me that there's just simply no knowledge from anybody, you know, and that's the answer is no. I think that someone knew, and it was more convenient, and probably more status securing to make sure that information just simply stayed quiet. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Trump wouldn't take his evangelical board of advisors, spiritual advisors, seriously, because I think most of his spiritual advisors don't take themselves seriously, and I don't mean that in a good way. I do not take myself seriously, but I believe very thoroughly and deeply the things that I teach and hold to, right? I don't think they take themselves seriously, and I don't think that they believe in what they're preaching anymore. I think it's pandering. I think it's theater.
I think you're seeing this, like, this nationalistic theology being permeated throughout the American church, and because, like, another example is that kid Kyle Rittenhouse who went into Kenosha.
That's the Kenosha kid, right?
Kenosha, that went in and with an assault rifle, AR-15, and you know, shot some people, and you know, there was a, you know, Christian GoFundMe group that did a GoFundMe for him, and it raised like over $500,000.
I heard something.
$500,000, and people are like praising him, calling him a hero, calling him a martyr, and this and that, and it's like, hold up. Since when?
He's alive. He didn't die, right?
No, he didn't. Yeah, he's alive. He's arrested. He's under.
Like, so the money is for like his defense. Is that
yes?
Okay.
And so his defense put out this video showing like, oh, this is what he did, and you know, this is he was shot at first, and this and that. It's like, that doesn't matter. He went there. He doesn't even live there. With an AR-15 assault rifle, and they're trying to say like, oh, he went there to help people, and he was there the day before wiping off graffiti. I'm like, that doesn't matter. He went there because he said this guy needs help defending his shop, and it's like, you gonna defend it with an assault rifle? And in the name of Jesus?
I think the problem that you run into is anytime you arm yourself with that kind of mentality, you're... And I am not anti-gun. I'm not...
Yeah, I'm not either.
I enjoy my boomsticks, right? Like, it's...
Boomsticks.
They're fun. They can be a good time when used properly and responsibly. They are fun. But I grew up with my grandfather, right, who was an old World War II vet.
Yeah.
You know, who was like, he had two rules. Number one, you did not carry unless you, if you were prone to anger, if you didn't have your head screwed on straight, if you were prone to panic or fear, right? So in other words, if you were emotionally driven, don't carry a gun.
Yeah.
That was kind of like one of, you know, that was kind of one of his places. Because you use it out of that emotion rather than out of your logic or even out of your training, right? Like, if that emotion dominates you, you know, that's not usually a good thing. The other thing was, he was always, always very, 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 you know, I can remember this from when I was a tiny kid. Like, you did not point that something, you point that thing at something you weren't willing to shoot.
Yeah.
And you did it with that high responsibility. It's like, you know, I mean, lessons from a grandfather, right, who went to war.
Yeah.
Right? So he's one of those guys where it's like, you know, he who knows? I don't know what he did completely. I know he fought, and I know he fought with that sense of, he carried a lot of regret in his life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was one of those kind of guys where it's like, you know, he died when I was a kid, so I didn't get a lot of deep conversations with him, you know. But the stuff that he said was very, oftentimes, really, like, profound or impacting in a way. And that was just the kind of thing where I just remember him never, like, he never wanted to talk about war. He never wanted to talk about his fighting. He didn't want to talk about his role in it, his place in it. Anyway, it's one of those things where I sit there and go, people who glorify that kind of stuff, people who live into it, I think, number one, they are very detached from the reality of what that kind of situation is. I think that, again, they look at it more as theater, as entertainment value, than as the actual responsibility and accountability of a person to another person. I think this is why, like, you know, I'm sure you saw on Twitter the uproar that took place from last night, where, you know, Trump was specifically asked, will you condemn and denounce white supremacists?
Yes. And he didn't.
And he didn't. And listen, for people who want to sit there and be like, oh, you know, so-and-so overspoke or so-and-so framed the crisis. Nope. I sat there. I listened. I listened with an open mind and a very, kind of like mentality of like, let's let each person speak. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they all spoke too much.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to the point where I'm like, oh my God, shut all of them up. But, you know, the question was pretty distinctly clear. And it was not biased. And he did not respond to it. And of course, it's, you know, he did kind of a classic Trump response, which is, you know, first he kind of mentioned, I believe, a group called the Proud Boys or something. I don't keep up with some of this stuff, so I don't know
what those are.
I didn't know if that was a group or a militia or an organization, or if it was just some kind of general weird statement that he made. So I have some homework to do. But he's like, you know, Proud Boys, like, stand up and stand by, or stand back and stand by, or something like that. Which is not exactly condemning. It's weirdly phrased, frankly.
Yeah.
But then it's like he immediately shifts. He's like, now let's, you know, we gotta talk about that Antifa.
Yeah.
It was like one of those moments where it's like, dude, you have one opportunity to at least clear some air and be like, hey, I don't hold to this. I don't hold to... Anyway, it didn't happen. It was a lost moment, in my opinion.
People
who buy into that are just... I think that it's just the... Again, the theater, it's like, you know, nothing against the wrestling for people who follow wrestling, but, you know, you can look at wrestling as the sport and the athleticism and the body work that goes into it, but you can also look at it as the fact that they're actors performing in a very scripted show, you know, displaying a certain choreography, and that's where I feel like a lot of our politic has kind of gotten to is it's less about the actual abilities and the skills and the talents of a certain individual or even the passion and ideas. And it's really more about these scripts and these choreographed movements, you know, where you sit there and go like, I'm not sure how much of this is real anymore.
Yeah.
Very weird. And weird debate.
And what's interesting is that's what you're just talking about.
Yeah.
Has carried over into the church.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I was, And if you don't think that some of this, you know, white nationalism and just, you know, overly politically driven mentality is permeating the church, go on Twitter, go follow Ed Stetzer.
Yes.
And go read every post that he makes. Go read the comments.
Yep, absolutely.
And you will see it. Ed Stetzer is a very fair and balanced guy. He is a very neutral guy. He looks at both sides and he just calls it like, here's what it is. You know, and he shares his concerns, and he also he never tries to condemn anyone. He just shares, like, he's very neutral, and he's just like, this is my concern on this, or this is this, and this is this. And he made a comment about Trump not condemning white supremacy. And man, people just, you know, just defended Trump's thing, you know, saying that, you know, if Trump doesn't get elected, you know, we're not going to be able to worship God freely anymore. And it's like, really? That's really, like, you're that concerned that one guy, because you realize the president does not have full power, right? Anything he wants to put across has to be approved by the Senate the House of Representatives.
It's almost like we have that balance of power thing, that checks and balances still like, in place.
You know, this is what we learned in elementary school, right? Like, we learned how the government is set up, and it's set up this way for a reason, so that one person can't do all this.
We need that show. What's that cartoon show from, like, back in the 70s that used to play? Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock with the bill. Yes. The bill would come down and teach us how it's made.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an odd day. I wonder, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how the next few weeks go out, and I feel like, especially since we're in the fall, you know, with a legitimate new podcast season kicking off, it'll be an interesting kind of weekly check-in. But I'm also fascinated. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on actually the Hillsong kind of misfire as far as the Instagram grows. Because what are your thoughts? We've had this discussion a little bit with some friends and some folks and colleagues that I work with and that my wife works with and just churches in general. Where is that line in your mind between, oh, I've sent this out as a tweet from my official church versus I've sent this out as a tweet from my personal account? At what point, like let's say that staffer for Hillsong, whether or not they sent it out from their Hillsong account or not, even if they sent it out from their personal one, they're still connected to Hillsong. They still work for Hillsong in a sense, or they volunteer or serve.
Yep.
So, at what point how do you see it that their personal kind of page or personal social media reflects or is represented to their church or their organization? I'm just curious to know, like, what are your thoughts on that? Because it's a delicate one, especially as pastors. I mean, you and I probably maintain a lot of our own church's social media. I've never accidentally misfired a post or anything like that, but I also am really careful about what I post on my personal stuff simply because I know that there's a lot of people who don't. They are not able to separate me as a person from me as a pastor or me as a private individual from me in the church that I represent, right? Yeah. So, like, if I posted something even on, like, my Facebook or on Twitter that was, like, you know, quote unquote inflammatory or controversial, there would be a lot of people who would be like, does your church think about that too? Is this what your church? So I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that? How do you see that or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So I'm careful. Like, I don't really post on Facebook much anymore just because it's just a trash can sometimes. And, you know, I'll just post, like, different, like, fun things of, you know, what our family's doing and this and that. And, I don't post any, like, strong opinions. I'll do it on Twitter because my Twitter and Facebook are not connected. I kind of keep it there. So it's, you're a little bit more anonymous. And, I mean, there's some people that know me that follow me on Twitter, but it's not much. But I'm still kind of careful with what I do because things can be so misconstrued and so taken out of context, even though you're trying. The only time I really, like, post on Twitter at all is if I'm responding to something. Like, I've responded to the whole Bethel worship leader Sean guy.
Right, doing his pop-up
just
thing.
I tweet right to him and I say, this is not cool. You should not be doing this. Is all this kind of stuff. But I don't really post a lot of stuff. Like our church Instagram, I just post, like, scripture verses or some videos if we're doing some announcements and things like that. I keep it pretty general.
Yeah.
I've thought about doing, like, more kind of doing like Instagram stories, doing going Instagram live just to do like sharing some opinions on things. But then it's like, man, you can get so misconstrued. Plus, yeah, we don't have a lot of followers anyway, so I don't know how many people would watch anyway. But so I think it's tough. It's because you are, if you people know you're a pastor of this church, they will associate you mm-hmm. always with that, no matter what you post, no matter what you do. You're going to be associated with that. And so I'd rather just have more conversations with people in person, you know, rather than just social media, because again, social media is just so, you know, people can take so many things out of context. Yeah. Like I mean, this is actually a cool story, but on Twitter I responded to something, and I don't, this is a while ago, so I don't remember what it was. And this person like responded, and she was like, I felt like she was accusing me of something. And I was like, kind of shot back. It's like, you know, that's not what I meant. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think she was kind of accusing me of being racist or something, but that's not what I meant. And please don't jump on here and accuse me of this. And so she said something back, and I was like, you know what? I'm getting off this thread. I'm going to private message this person. Mm-hmm. With private message, I said, you know, I just didn't appreciate that and this and that. And she responded, and we actually started following each other. Mm-hmm. And we worked it out, and it was great. And it was like, this is what it should be like. You know, you get off a thread, you private message each other, you work it out, all this kind of stuff. And I try to really think of, I almost tweeted something yesterday, and it's like, no, that's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to sound the wrong way. I just deleted it. I think if more people would use the delete button, you know, it'd probably be a little bit better, because it's just hard. I feel like I want to point to Christ in everything yep. I do. And if I'm writing something and I'm reading it and going, is this pointing to Christ? Probably not. Even though my intent is to, somebody might see it as the opposite. So I better not post it. And so it's just, it's a difficult thing. And I think with the church and politics, I think the church needs to take a serious step back and step away from politics. We can discuss it. We can be involved with it. But I think, and this is going to sound weird coming from a pastor, but I think the government should enforce that Lyndon B. Johnson law where it takes away tax exempt status from churches and pastors that endorse candidates, because that's, you're not supposed to.
Yeah,
it's against the law. We're supposed, and that sounds weird, but I think it has to be that way, because it forces churches and pastors to take a step back from politics.
Listen, let's call it again. We'll kind of bring it back to the beginning, which is, you know, take someone who, you know, like a couple of the folks who are in the spiritual advisors of the current administration. I mean, that's, you know, there have been people who've been able to be spiritual advisors to presidents without it becoming a defining part of their ministry.
Yeah, Billy Graham was. Billy Graham. For a long time.
Rick Warren,
yeah.
You know, there have been, you know, several ministers who are part of that kind of, you know, they're in that discussion, they're part of, you know, praying and supporting the president, oftentimes regardless of their own personal political preference. Mm-hmm. I think you would have a hard time saying that for some of the advisors, and a lot of these advisors tend to, you know, like the current ones kind of run the same kind of reality TV show in their churches as Trump did previously, right? So it's like, there's a part of me that goes like, they're if you were to take away that tax exempt status, and they are suddenly a for-profit ministry, I would be curious to see how quickly they still, you know, promoted or you know, remained part of that particular campaign. So anyway, it's just, I completely agree. I think there's a part where you go like, once you've crossed that line into like, mm-hmm. hey, politics are actually a defining part of your church stance or your you know, I think your prophet stance should be at least examined, at least looked at.
Well, I think it's interesting. Here's a good contrast. Obama, President Obama, had a spiritual advisor who was a pastor for, you know, I think for the 8 years he was in office, and nobody really knew who he was, and nobody really knew his name. Trump's spiritual advisors are on TV all
the time.
That's what
I'm saying, is they're basically running like their own version of reality church TV anyways.
So. It's like they're using that. They're like reality TV stars that go on these shows, and you know they're going on there just to be noticed so they can be a celebrity.
Yeah.
It's like Paul White, Robert Jeffress, and some of these other, like those are the main two. You can tell that they just want to be a celebrity. It's all about them.
Yeah. Speaking of reality TV, you should talk about your Bears.
Hey, we're 3-0. First place in the NFC North.
Speaking of trash entertainment, let's talk about the Bears. I'm actually fascinated.
that you're 3-0. I could not believe that you're 3-0. I mean, my Packers are 3-0, but we have a legitimate team.
So do we. We're 3-0.
So, what the heck? Is Mitch Trubisky done?
Yes.
We're just going to take a hard left off of all of our conversation and have a quick moment on sports here.
Mitchell Trubisky.
Think Mitch is done.
And this is what pains
Nick
me.
Foles is the future.
He's not the future, but he's the present. Trubisky, I hate it because he's not like a Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, you kind of like...
You love to hate him.
You love to hate him. Trubisky is a guy that you just can't hate because he's such a nice guy. He works hard. He says that, you know, he's always... I mean, he made himself available after that game again, benched for the media. And that's set. That's huge for a guy. That says a lot about his character.
Yeah, he's a stand-up.
So I'm texting my brother-in-law. Like, we're watching the game. We're always texting each other. And when Foles came in, I was like, man, this makes no sense. In the middle of a game? And then I saw Foles play, and I was like...
Oh, it makes a lot of sense.
Makes perfect sense now. The thing is, like, Trubisky just cannot do it. He just cannot. He does not have the awareness of what's going on. He just can't read a defense. Like, here's the contrast. Here's a stark contrast between Foles and Trubisky. A guy that can read defenses, a guy that can't.
Yeah.
Foles, that last touchdown that he threw to win the game, he told Anthony Miller, if they bring an all-out blitz, you run to the L in Atlanta in the end zone, it'll be a stiff ball and it'll be a touchdown. And he said, if I wipe it off, you know that's the signal. And right before the snap, you see Foles do this because he read the defense. He knew it was an all-out blitz.
I'll have to go watch that.
And he threw it, and it was. If you watch the replay, he gets hit as he throws. He throws it right to the L, and Anthony Miller just right there.
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah,
I've got the. I think the game should be on my.
Yeah.
Gonna take a little peek at that and see how it came out.
But yep.
Anyway, it was. I have to admit, I sat there going like, what the heck? And then I saw Foles came in and Trubisky was benched, and I'm like, uh-oh. And then the game was won, and I was like, well, perhaps.
Foles literally threw 5 touchdowns. 2 were taken away. The interception he threw was actually a touchdown that they called it a touchdown on the field and then overturned it. And then Miller dropped one. So he literally threw 5 touchdowns in a quarter and a half.
Did you happen to watch my Packers decimate the Saints?
I wouldn't call it decimated.
Absolute thrashing.
I would call what the Chiefs did to the Ravens a
decimated. Oh, my God. So my fantasy game was basically one of those kind of weeks where I was scheduled to win significantly. And then I had 3 guys go down in the game, and I was scheduled to lose quite significantly. And then I had a couple of guys step it up, and it came down to basically a 14-point difference. And the only thing, I was still scheduled to lose, right? Like, I was still projected to lose. But the only difference was my opponent had Lamar Jackson.
Oh, 95 yards passing.
As his quarterback. And I'm sitting there going, I'm going to lose this one, and it's going to have been close, but I'm probably going to lose. And then he only put up like 9 points or something like that, or 15 points or something, and I won. And I was like, but I watched the game too, and I was like, holy goodness. Kansas City is good.
You know what's funny is we'll all look back at 2020 and go, 2020 was the worst, except for probably Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
He won the Super Bowl. Signed a $500 million contract, got engaged, and now he's having a baby. Oh, and he also bought part of the Royals.
Oh, yeah, he's part of the Royals. Yeah, he's an owner now.
I think his 2020 is going okay.
Yeah, he's doing just fine. Just fine. So, hey, we're going to wrap it up for this week. We will catch you next time. Take it easy.
See ya.